to the Mug Meeting Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Dutilleux. Our March meeting started with the usual roundtable discussion, moderated by Doug Shufelt. Topics covered included Plone security, a postfix security fix for an SMTP over SSL vulnerability, digital signatures, and UDF DVD-ROM formatting, among others.
I'll do a security announcement. If you're running Plone or you know anyone who's running Plone, I think they might be running Plone. Do mention a pretty serious vulnerability, e.g., you know, remote visitor can own your site. What is Plone? Plone is a content management system. Plone. Sorry, my pronunciation.
I heard clone, but you mean
Plone. Oh, Plone.
That's right.
I heard it's wrong with it.
PL.
The most prominent site I know of that is running it and you know, no signs that they got owned was fsf.org, so it is used in places. It's used at parity.ca.
Is there a patch?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Upgrade the current version?
Actually, if you're on the 3.3 or the 2 series, you've got to apply the hotfix. They don't have a version.
Okay.
Because they've moved on to 4.4.
They belong to a club. They changed over to Plone a few years ago. In a couple months of their website, they claimed they had a hardware problem. The website had ceased to exist. their so-called recovery, they have a totally new website and all of the old content gone.
Do your backups.
Yeah. Now, he showed them where they could get a backup from about 4 years ago. They haven't even recovered that. So I said, click this link. They didn't want it.
Oh. Speaking of security announcements, in case any of you are running Postfix for mail, there is what's considered a critical security fix in Postfix, and the current version has been updated, the stable version has been updated, the maintenance version has been updated, and they even put out a new updated version for the legacy forget about it version that they swore they'd never update again. This vulnerability apparently affects every single SMTP client that uses SSL, not just Postfix. Now, the catch is, it's always been there. This isn't a zero-day exploit. It's just nobody really, A, noticed, and B, cared, because SMTP over SSL just wasn't really a big thing until fairly recently. The patch, in fact, only closes the security hole if the client bothers to verify the server's SSL cert, which is still uncommon. If you don't bother to verify your server's SSL cert, you are vulnerable to plain text injection through man-in-the-middle attacks. That's every single SSL, SMTP over SSL client in the world. It's a flaw in the SSL protocol. Yeah.
Just a few.
Now, luckily, man-in-the-middle attacks are not trivial to mount, but...
With wireless networks, it's getting increasingly common. I was at a conference once where there was a guy in the parking lot who placed a network up with the same ID as the one in the hotel. And those of us who were technically apt spotted it and told people not to connect to it. But, that's what he was doing, I'm sure. And to boot, I bet he was simply rooting back to the hotel's real one and sitting there.
Why not?
Yeah.
This affects the mail?
Theoretically, it affects every mail client.
If you're using TLS?
Client.
MTA or?
This would affect MUAs that use SMTP for submission and MTAs that use SMTP. So if your MUA or MTA doesn't do SSL at all, or you haven't configured it to use SSL at all, you are exactly as vulnerable as you always were to man-in-the-middle attacks.
Which is completely.
Yeah, which is completely. The main new discovery was that if you're using SSL, which you thought protected you from plain text injection attacks, it doesn't unless you actually bother to verify the server's certificate.
So even when you use SSL, the man in the middle can always tear the SSL down and terminate the tunnel itself and go plain text back to the source if the source takes plain text as well and most servers.
Well, but that's why verify your certificate chains.
Yeah.
So up till now, it was basically considered if you use SSL, well, you're fairly safe. That's not quite as true as it used to be. Anyway. New versions of Postfix are out. I'm sure there will be new versions of SendMail, XIM, Ad Infinitum coming out in the next couple weeks.
So there'll need to be new versions of all the clients as well?
Yeah, so for
all the
people...
To verify all the certificates properly?
So for all the people that you have who are still running Windows 98 with Outlook Express, yeah, they're pretty much SOL. Yeah.
Surprise. Except they can't download Thunderbird.
That's true.
You'd have to, you're right, but they'd have the same problem as the NVA, and they would necessarily be patched.
Things all would probably do is nag you every time you connect it to that your certificate had it. Well, I'm just going to click that away because, like, what are you going to do? The certificate's wrong. Okay, so.
Yeah. So for everybody except Sean in the room, yeah, we'd start panicking. Not.
Yeah, that's SMTP outgoing.
Well, but it also affects submission.
Yeah, still mail.
Yeah, but it would affect your mail client talking over SSL back to your mail server.
Yeah, so they could change my business. Like.
Yeah, okay, fine.
It's not going to let people eventually show up on your desk.
Probably not.
Yeah, the worst that could happen is an impersonated email.
Yeah, it does open. What's more disturbing to me is the fact that if you can do this with SMTP, what vulnerabilities does that mean are going to start showing up as cert bulletins for other protocols in the next couple months?
The worst implication here is it is not one person, but if you're relying on the SSL to deliver your message and have your message not be read.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't have been doing that in the first place. But. Yeah.
Well, it's a half reasonable assumption if you're directly talking to the destination SMTP server. And and you trust that once the message is delivered, it's, you know, if it's read, it's the recipients who are reading it.
True. Anyway.
Still worth it. Bugs are bugs.
On a related security note, anybody using digital signatures in a Linux GUI frame? And what's your experience?
Sorry, GUI name?
Any kind of a baby version. Any mail servers, document signing stuff, or film. Anything basically uses an X509.
I have Nick Mail, and that's for.
So you're not digital signing.
It's signature, it's not encryption. Yeah. But you could do encryption.
Working, not working?
Works great. It takes a little bit of work to get it configured properly to get the right keys in there. But after that, it follows. You hit sign or encrypt or whatever.
When you hit sign, does it demand a password or anything else, or does it get along?
It depends on whether you're running daemon. With my system, I have it running because if I type in mask key ring password, it automatically does.
Okay.
And
Nick
Mail, that's a Thunderbird extension?
Yeah, it's a Thunderbird.
Well, for what it's worth, I was doing signed and encrypted email back in 1999 on Linux with Netscape.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Trevor will remember
anyone
this.
Anyone with recent experience?
You know what? It worked fine then. It still works fine now. The main problem with it is key rollover. And how do you manage key rollover? Mm-hmm. Well, and key revocation, although there's fairly well understood solutions for it, you still have to implement OSCP.
Most of the clients don't check CRLs, though.
Well, almost all of them you can tell them or configure them to check CRLs.
But do they always?
If you've got them set up to do so, yeah.
Yeah.
I found that it works in my experience with three different organizations that have tried it now, one somewhat successfully. Mm-hmm. If you go with public PKI certs, like you get your email signing certs from VeriSign, Thought, et cetera, things more or less work because you're piggybacking on someone else's $10 million worth of infrastructure.
Yeah.
If you try and do your own CA, good luck.
Well, unless you get deep pockets, just go to Entrust and say install it here.
Very true. But yeah, from a practical perspective, key management is still as big a problem as
exactly.
It always was. There haven't been any magical revolutionary.
No eurekas in that business.
Actually, if you're using Entrust, there sort of is, but you have to be using the Entrust proprietary extensions, which are only available for certain email clients.
Yeah.
Because Entrust uses the dual certificate model.
Right.
Everybody else still uses a single certificate model, which is inherently fragile. So it's doable. Yeah. It's perfectly doable. It's just a pain in the butt.
Anybody else used digital signatures?
This guy, in this case? Mm-hmm. This is an Entrust key.
That's a FIPS
yeah.
2. Whatever.
Something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're going to plug that in and put in your master password and it signs whatever you're doing?
Yeah. It signs and decrypts. It has, it connects to a repository of public keys.
So if you're offline, you can sign, but you can't?
I use it on the desktop, so I'm not offline very often. I don't use it much, but we have it. It's in trust with Outlook, Microsoft Outlook.
Yeah. Does that work in Linux as well? Is there a client that'll talk to that device?
I'm not sure about that.
It should be.
With Entrust, yeah, you can use it offline. We'll let you can read stuff and sign, and you can sign things. And then you can also, in our case, we also connect to a VPN.
Yeah. If you're offline, you're not connected.
Yeah. Well, but you have to authenticate to your machine portal to connect to
What I'm saying is, if you're offline and you want to do a bunch of your email and sign a bunch of them before you send, you can sign offline, and then when you connect, it's a whole bunch.
It
you don't have to re-sign or anything that goes out. Okay. Good. Thank you. Anyone else? Great. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Has anyone had experience creating UDF ISOs, Linux, BSD, anything?
Yeah.
What did you use?
Well, I was using a BBD mastering program, so I wasn't having to think about what's the file system. It was here's the video image, here's the video file, re-encode it and give me an ISO file.
And what makes it a little bit trickier is it needs to run on command line. So essentially, I've got a headless server and I've got an old Xbox with a dead DVD drive. So to be able to play the DVDs on the Xbox, I need to rip it, and I can rip it to a file structure. It doesn't need to break the encryption on it. But it would be nice to stuff it back into an ISO again, because Xbox Media Center can go online and pull down metadata and posters and make it all fancy looking. Fits within one of those.
I think I'd heard you using those running commands sometimes.
Okay.
It's out there.
It's somewhere.
I've done it on the Mac, but it was not command line.
Okay. Because, like I say, there's nothing there. Otherwise, I'd write a script on some other machine I have running, but I've
already Is there not a make you that UDF app? UDFS?
I didn't find one. I mean, there's
I thought
MK.
There was. But
no, it's...
It's the ISO...
It's a different...
9660 or whatever?
It's not ISO.
No, it's not
ISO. It's not CD9660. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's different.
It's UDF.
It makes software.
Xbox won't take the standard DVD ROM drive?
It'll take VOB stuff. It's just for me, it won't pull the metadata and make it nice for me, and I want it to look nice, so...
A3B
or something.
A3B, does it do it?
I don't know. Well, it can write ISOs, but I don't know if it starts back in.
But will it do them with UDF? Because a lot of things
will. It's been years since I've had to use it.
If you're since really hard up, you could do an strace or something similar and run a GUI and see what it's doing. I mean, that's what I would do at the last resort. Yeah.
As long as you first know it is a GUI that you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can find the GUI that does that.
Pretty much all of them do, I think.
I know K3B will do UDF and it'll output to the ISO, but...
Well, I thought that in the K3B, I thought there was in the configuration that actually that it actually told you the commands that it was using for various... Especially because you can modify the parameters or something like that.
Okay. Well, yeah, you have to be able to tell what the path is to those commands.
Yeah, I think you can get the commands are specific.
This is half speculative, but it's possible that the classic MK ISOFS, that old ISO whatever file system, it may actually patch a flag on modern distros for UDF. It's worth peeking, because I would sort of know what you have to do.
Might be hidden somewhere. Using FreeBSD. FreeBSD, Solaris, and Linux, I think.
Send the command here.
Thank you, sir.
Well, it's a round table.
It's the Sean thing to do.
Yours is what?
I'm lazy. It's minus J. Minus J, you can specify the talk output type. The difference between UDF and ISO is that first little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, it's formatted the same way, the rest of the data.
It's the table, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can even strip it off and replace it with an ISO and check some master.
That would be a trick.
Because you can specify up to three or something different kinds of allocation uses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm half asleep.
Actually, that's a good point.
Yes.
Yeah, personally, I know a lot to do with video and audio creation, and recently, use of backup, somehow all the EDI files. And the curious thing about it was, on the backup, and gigabytes and gigabytes and stuff, on the backup was only the EDI, and they all got corrupted exactly this place, with the exact same corruption.
What was the corruption?
Well, it's like you go to play the video, and then every 14 seconds, there would be like this static interference. It was the same, all of them, and only the AVI file. They had waves, MP3s, WMDs, everything else, and they weren't affected at all.
Mm-hmm. It was tried on multiple computers?
Yes.
Okay.
That's...
What was the backup medium?
Well, it was going from PCs, one of them, they were both IDs. It was going over a wire network. Backups had been done, everything was fine. Like I said, this time, they said it reared from 2 points to one, it was only the AVI file. And it was the exact same corruption on each, and 14, like you go 14 seconds, and 14 seconds,
that's good. Did you transfer it using SIPs? Did you transfer it using SMB or SIPs?
No, it was correct. Like I said,
well,
with what protocol?
Yeah. So if you're using SIPs, I have found big files just bugger up.
No, oh, nice.
Well, actually, almost sounds like a log size issue.
Yeah, if you have every 14 frame standard zone.
Yeah, what do you think is wrong?
Yeah.
In particular, AVI sync files were of different types of
the problem. The only files are going to be the AVI, the trees are being picked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uncompressed video.
Maybe.
It's usually compressed.
A lot of AVIs ain't.
Yeah, but
I got a standard video capture card and it produces AVIs and they are.
AVI is just a container.
No, you can, but say most of the ones that I've seen are totally uncompressed.
Uncompressed is a container.
Various. Like none of them was like gigabytes inside. And this was the thing too, like virtual MP5.
That's just weird.
Yeah, I know. Because fortunately, I was able to go to an older back. That was all good.
Check the file size and see if the AVIs are going. See if there are little AVIs, if there are little AVIs.
Ones that are less than 14 seconds?
Yeah, well.
Like 14 seconds is a real short AVI. So.
No, it's like I said, the AVIs were fair size. It's just as you listen to it, just every 14 seconds, the same thing showed up.
Audio, video, both?
A bit of both.
Fully wired network or
yep,
wireless?
Fully wired.
Windows?
Next EDI. But like I said, we've been doing it for the last 2 years, and it was the last one that's been over.
It's been good for the last 2 years. So
that's why I was able to go to that.
So you ran a virus check on
everything? Yes.
Yeah.
Very anal about virus. It
sucks.
Yeah,
okay.
That's weird.
This could be a bit of paranoia on my part. I've had a bit of experience sometimes where updates will sometimes break existing programs, especially with
advanced keyboards.
Sometimes,
we'll see.
You know, it might
see in a
vacuum
connector.
The video codecs?
Well, partially the video codecs, but I'm sort of thinking maybe it's running up against a premium continuity issue. Because we're trying to do that to our lab now. We're having clients bringing in the DVD players and after installing them, there's an error message saying, sorry, you cannot play this because this is premium content and you have not paid for it.
You don't have premium
content. So regardless of whether or not it's their own content or it's commercial content, I'm just thinking that might be what you're looking for.
Have you tried to take the new
software? Yeah, but he went back to the older copy and it was okay.
Yeah, if you went back to the older copy and it was okay, that's not the
issue. Yes. As a matter of fact.
Did you take the copy file back to the original player and play it there to see if it's a player problem or if it's an actual
cross your fingers?
I did try to use several records.
So first of all,
I normally use VLC.
It's just take the two files if you've got some time, like overnight, and run FC on and see what's actually changing on the files. See if there's something predictable you can look at. Might tell you that something that one attack. You know, suddenly blocks are going to zero, it should be a buffer on your own.
You never rotor change.
Shouldn't.
MTU size.
Yeah, we on the rotor.
Just
just thought that SMB was smart enough to figure out stuff like that.
SMB is dumb as a sack of hammers.
Do you still have your old router?
No, actually, it was MTS's router before, and now I got my
shouldn't. It's local to local. You're not.
Yeah, but you always look for. When you get a problem like that, it's been going well, you always look at what's changed. And
you didn't
make the router change. So.
You didn't update Windows, did you? Like, between the backups, I'm serious.
Yeah,
because
that could change.
There's always security stuff that need to be done. So, like I said, I was just found it very strange that it was only the
Maybe
the codec got updated.
Your ADIs are the only ones are locked.
Although he says he played it back on multiple machines.
Yeah.
It got updated on all.
And VLC
has and the backups work fine. The older backups were fine.
No, that's not easy. I didn't say it was easy.
Yikes.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.